And I never went for an advanced degree, but now I know how people feel when they're saying, oh, I'm trying to get my dissertation done because it's trying to fit 5 pounds of whatever into a 3 pound bag.
Yeah, me neither. I barely eked through a bachelor's degree. I can't even imagine going for, you know, some advanced degree. Oh, yuck.
Our talents lie elsewhere.
And interests, yes.
We like to sit in small little caves and talk to ourselves all day. That's pretty much how it goes for us. But you are not one to, at the height of the pandemic, which is kind of where we met or how we met.
Yeah. Yeah.
You had not slowed down. You were still traveling. You were still going to.
No.
If there was an event, you were going.
Oh, yeah. It turned out to be the right move because I met a circle of people in marketing in my industry who felt the same way. Business grew during the pandemic because of that. There were a lot of business owners and brand owners who said, oh, we're going to stay home because, you know, the government told us to, and we're not going to leave our house because we heard so on the television, and their businesses failed. I was like, do I want to go out and get sick? No. But at the same time, I don't want to starve to death either. Got to do what you got to do to make a business run. So it wasn't a good time. I'm not glad it happened, but business grew. Many other types of businesses will tell you the same thing that, you know, if they, we all hate this word from 2021, but if they pivoted to the right direction, they figured it out. And if they didn't, then they lost their business. And that's just kind of where we ended up now. Now, I think the real question is, what happens next time? What happens next time when there's some big event that some people say, you've got to stay home and you can't run your business and you can't go see customers and you can't go find new business. You have to stay home. You're thinking, well, then I'm not going to have a business anymore. Like, what are we going to do? And I'm not really sure where most people are right now with that answer.
Because we're talking about the pandemic and the effects of it, for good or bad, whatever side of it you're on, whether you're super cautious and you're still masking up when you're walking outside, if you're not going out at all, or if you're saying, you know what, you only live once and I'm going to live it to the fullest, or caution be damned, I'm doing me. The pandemic has had profound effects, I think, on all of us. And I wanted to bring up an article that I was late at getting to in one of your favorite publications, the New York Times.
Oh, yeah. Great. I love science fiction.
Stop it. It is based in science because they're quoting actual scientists. The article is called, Did the Pandemic...
Anthony Fauci, one of those scientists?
Please, let's not go there. Let's play nicely today.
Oh, okay.
And as a matter of fact, welcome to Embark, where we always play nicely. Liz Solar and Jack Monson sitting down having a civil conversation about things that we might disagree on. And then when we agree, watch out. Then it really gets real. But this article is called...
Now you're in trouble. Yeah.
Exactly. Then now it's a force of two. So did the pandemic change your personality? Possibly. Mm. And it's an article from October 22nd by Christine Chung. She talks about, or, you know, she is citing some studies, but essentially says that it has changed people's personalities, particularly among young people.
Sure.
What is kind of interesting is that this isolation that people experienced, there were these restrictions as kids were late teens, early 20s, a time where there's already a lot of social anxiety. Where do I fit in? Am I free? Right? Don't you want to go back?
Can you imagine? I cannot imagine.
No. So already it's a time fraught with all sorts of anxiety. And now you're saying, don't hang around with people. So there's classes of kids who have graduated from college or were still in college or about to graduate who don't know how to interact with the real world. It's really scary to them. And what's even worse is that there are people who are thinking, you know, I kind of like this. I'm used to it now. We know all those people who say, yeah, no, I'm going to just stay in.
Yeah.
We may never see those people again.
I think it made the extroverted more extroverted in that they needed to get out and see more people and get that recharge that they need. And it made the introverted more introverted, thinking, I never have to leave my apartment again. I can order food and watch Netflix. And if I get lonely, I'll get another cat. Nothing against the cat ladies of America. That's not healthy for most people. Like anything, the pandemic just amplified your personality traits that were already there.
This is an article about how personalities actually changed. One piece, it talks about the declines amounted to, and I'm quoting here, about one decade of normative personality change. People under 30 years old exhibited disrupted maturity. I think that might have preceded COVID, but I'm not sure.
But right.
You know, but that change is the opposite of what happens. As we creep closer to 30, we start to mature. People might get married, have children. The people who say, that's not really what I'm into, they may grow a business or find a passion that either would augment family or takes the place of that. But people are starting to find themselves by the time they're 30. That's just not happening. You see a lot of people in your travels, and you travel quite a bit. What are you seeing reflected?
I see exactly what you're describing. Even before COVID, it was going that direction. And again, I think COVID just amplified it. When our parents' generation were of the same age, they had five kids and a grandchild and were running a business and, you know, a home and three cars, right? And people the same age now are nowhere near that. And it's not just due to their desires and so forth. It could be circumstantial. I don't see too many people who are, you know, 38 with a big family and set in a career and going a certain direction. Now, I don't like to paint anyone of a generation with the same brush because I think that's lazy. I think that's lazy marketing. There are a lot of 30-something year olds who are just killing it out there in whatever their field they're in, or making a difference in the world, or raising a great family. There's a lot of those people. But I think it's a much smaller percentage than that same age group, let's say in 1958 or something like that. I think the generations have just sort of slowed down within the decades, if that makes sense.
Why do you think that is? I mean, certainly, you know, and you're a big guy on economy, certainly it's much more difficult for someone who's 38 to afford to buy a home or even pay rent because as the housing market got strangled, people who had to rent and landlords, people who owned property that they could rent, saw an opportunity to inflate prices even more. Because where are these people going to go?
Well, those same landlords that are inflating prices, one of the reasons they're doing so is because the property taxes that they're paying now compared to what they paid 40 years ago are basically, you know, keeping small landowners from owning more land. Property owners are basically footing the bill for everything within some states not so much, but in many states, property tax is how you pay for everything. It's how you pay for local government services and schools and everything else. So those numbers are huge compared to what they were in the 1950s or 1960s, when we used to think everybody can just go out and buy a home and buy land and build something. That's not so much the case anymore.
I guess my experience is that home property taxes are commensurate or relative to the value of homes in the Northeast and a lot of the East Coast and any place on the coast, even places that were never expensive. The real estate is prohibitive for most people. If someone said, you know, can you put 5 or 10% down? You're still talking about more money than most people have saved. Way more.
Oh, sure.
Like you have
to
take out a loan to do the down payment. And then, so I don't find that the taxes are the bigger problem. I think that there are all types of other ways. You know, one is student debt. College debt is outrageous.
We should just forgive it and just, you know, let us pay for everybody's college going forward.
Oh, now I know you're just pulling my leg, my dear.
Yeah. You know, let's look at that debt. if someone did buy a home at the age of 30, or someone did go to college at the age of 30 or younger, why are we paying the debt for one of them and not the debt for the other person?
I'm not sure we're paying for one and not the other. I think there's a cap of $20,000 that's forgiven. So it's not $20,000. That is not small change. And for some people, they can't save $400, you know, a year, let alone $20,000. So it's not an insignificant amount of money. But the individual debt that's being paid is not huge. I have a bigger problem with what universities, financial institutions are doing that have made getting an education so financially prohibitive. That's the root. And I blame both parties.
I think the real problem is not how does somebody pay back a $100,000 loan to get a liberal arts degree. It's why did it cost $100,000 to get a liberal arts degree for something that's going to pay 50 grand a year out of school, maybe, right? Or less. Like, why is someone taking out $100,000, $200,000 when you know it will take years to pay that back? Why does it cost so much to go to school? Maybe this is something that the pandemic is showing us, is that maybe it shouldn't cost that much to go to school. If you want to go to Harvard, or you want to go to Northwestern, or you want to go to somewhere expensive, okay, go ahead. If you have the money, do it. But in order to get an education and possibly to get a degree, do you have to go to Harvard? Do you have to go to Northwestern? You could go to XYZ online university. We used to joke about those things. Now it's a lot more real than it used to be.
Exactly. And I won't name any of those schools, but I will name Harvard, Yale, the Ivies, and then the little Ivies, those smaller liberal arts colleges. Two things about them is that the prestige factor. I think we've both met people from Ivy League schools, and sure, there are a lot of smart people there, but there are a lot of pretty ordinary people there too.
Yeah, they have money to go.
They have the money. They might work a little bit harder. They might not have the native intelligence, but they just work harder than anybody else. And to them, I'm like, good. Hard work should be rewarded. The other piece, Harvard's MBA program used to say to their students, if the day you graduate, you cannot get five members of royalty on the phone and the top five CEOs on the phone, we have not done our job. So what Ivies do is what University of Vermont or Massachusetts doesn't do is give you, for the most part, give you access. And as we know, it's the access where the real value is. I'm not sure that people who go to Harvard or Yale or some of the Ivies, they may either be legacy, they may be in a position where they can afford it. Or if you can't afford it, most people think, I don't have enough money, so I'm going to go to a state school. There's so much money for scholarships in these more exclusive colleges that people just don't exploit. So there is an entrance into it. But your point is a very good one about why is it so expensive. Years ago, NPR had a story on college costs. And at the time I was working at a university where many colleges, and here we're lousy with colleges. I mean, you can't walk down the street and not trip over a university. And many schools used to have consortiums. So you could take courses at any one of 3 to 5 colleges. They might have one study abroad program. They might share some resources. Now, every college, whether it made sense or not, and they each had their own program. And what they were finding, and this was maybe 15 years ago that I heard this story, was that they had more personnel at the colleges who were there to spearhead these projects than they had kids that were interested in going.
Yeah. Someone saw it as a moneymaker at some point. The cost of education at the state schools, Ohio State, Illinois, Texas, right? It's those schools that are now as expensive as what we used to think of Ivy League schools being. Those are the kids who are getting an education that they cannot afford.
There is a school in the western suburbs here. It's called LaSalle, and it used to be LaSalle Junior College. And it was a 2-year college for women. And then after a while, when people expanded, that's another reason. You know, a lot of these 2-year schools were kind of that in and out. Maybe the young ladies wore pearls in hopes of getting their MRS
You know, we used to call it the MRS degree. Right? Sure, right.
Right. You know, and get one of those Harvard boys. So
can we say that now? Is that a faux pas to say?
No, okay. But I'm just speaking in the jargon of the times. So I wouldn't do that now, but that was the thing, right? Like I'm going for my MRS, which I think is hilarious now. The school went to 4 years, and what they found is that a lot of the students that attended were first generation college kids. The tuition, room and board was $60,000. That's an awful lot. Like if your parents aren't really making a lot of income. So this past year, they decided to do a 33% discount in their tuition rates, which is $40,000, which is still, that's real money.
Yeah, that's real money.
But at least there is a move to say, we recognize how expensive it is and we can roll back. Let's see how this affects enrollment. Let's see how it affects their endowment. If they've had an endowment and now it's going to dwindle, how it affects their services. This is all, I think, an experiment now, but we'll see. It's getting those kids into the class. And, you know, for 2 years, people weren't really going to school. The only people I know who were going to school were kids who were either in private or parochial schools where they said, you know what, we're going to go by our own protocols and we're going to put systems in place so people feel safe. But come on, it's okay to go to school.
And back to our whole mindset changing during COVID, I will be very interested to see, first of all, how this affected, as we talked about before, teenagers and kids way more than it affected you and me, right? Mm-hmm. I can't imagine your formative years being locked in an apartment or a house for 2 years and not going to school. That's beyond recognizable to me. But I'll also be interested in seeing how people were affected differently over time if you grew up in California versus Florida. Or if you grew up in Texas versus Chicago, or, you know, if you grew up somewhere where you were in this pandemic lockdown for 2 weeks and then we started trickling out quickly, or if it was hardcore shutdown for an extended period of time, I think we will be able to tell a lot by where was someone. Were they doing remote schooling for a really long time in California, or did they go back to school relatively quickly? Like, I think that will be very interesting to see the effects, and we probably really won't see it for a long time, right, until those kids are adults.
We won't see it, and we don't know whether it's temporary or not, and I think that was the point of the survey, that there were shifts in personality traits or the way behavior manifested personality. That could just be a snapshot. They were cautious to say that anything was long term. What we do know is that depression and anxiety was up, you know, maybe 25-30% in the first few months before it was, you know, day 160 or day 340. It happened right away, as did the use of alcohol and drugs.
Oh, yeah. I mean, long term, did the lockdowns kill more people than a virus? I will guess the answer will be yes to mental health and addiction and other behaviors that are killing people and will kill people over the next decade that would not have had those effects if they weren't in some lockdown situation, as opposed to the number of people who died from a virus, which is horrible, and it was horrible, and it still is horrible. But let's face it, the lockdown and the government mandates didn't really make a difference in the number of people dying. You know, have a vaccine and you won't get the virus. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, you will. Or have a vaccine and the virus won't be as bad. Well, yeah, actually it is. Wear a mask and you won't get the virus. Well, actually you still will, right? All of those things that led to people still getting a virus and still surviving, how do we balance that out with the damage that we've done, especially to these kids, in, you know, having them locked up over an extended period of time? And again, I think for some of us, we were locked up for a while and then we weren't. You know, like you mentioned earlier, I just left the state again. And but especially for people in certain cities and especially certain states where, you know, you really didn't have that option to leave and go to places and go to schools and go to houses of worship and go to restaurants and things like that. So we'll see. But I will stand by my prediction that over time we will see that the lockdowns killed more people than the virus did.
It's a tale of two pandemics in certain ways, because the mm-hmm. majority of people who got very sick or died from COVID were elderly, not even 65, 70, yeah. people over 80, okay?
Yeah.
Or people
yeah.
with...
Yeah, they were obese, or they had horrible conditions like diabetes and other life-threatening conditions that this particular virus just made that all that much worse. And for those folks, absolutely, stay home. Get vaccinated, wear a mask, take care of yourself. There's also a little bit of morbid irony in some things like states closing down outdoor activities for people who should get out and exercise, right? Like, looking back, it's like, why did we close the beaches, for crying out loud, right? Why were things that could have actually made people healthier, why did we close those things down? You know, there's a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking.
Sometimes even experts don't know what they don't know. And I'll give people the benefit of the doubt. Sometimes new information comes in and then we adjust, because I think that was a lot of the frustration that people mm-hmm. said, hey, you know, one day I'm wiping down my groceries and now you're saying I don't even need a mask. So that's very confusing to people. Their biggest problem, maybe you can give them some tips on this, is communicating the message clearly and perhaps saying, this is new information and we just want to make it clear that please don't wipe down. I mean, I never did that because, you know, that's the way I roll.
Yeah.
No, I'm not wiping down my, you know, whatever. Don't take your kids to the playground because there's all kinds of germs right. on the metal and that's where it sticks, which ended up not being the case. I don't think it was said with any malice beforehand, but you brought up a great point about comorbidities, and that might be the pandemic or the pandemics that as a country we need to address. You can't even tell anybody that they have a high BMI anymore, which is not about fat shaming. It's about, hey, you're beautiful the way you are, but you're on a collision course with some heavy duty health issues. So we have an obese, sedentary population who have high blood pressure and diabetes and all these allergies that people didn't have before. Some of them are environmental. Some of them are perhaps you shouldn't be eating some of those things, or maybe it doesn't agree with you and you need to work with a nutritionist or a doctor. I think we could save a lot of people and save a lot of money and resources by people having healthier habits. Not to get on anybody's personal, you know, health hygiene, but couldn't hurt.
Yeah, and it's all things we've known for a long time. Exercise, eating well, that makes you healthier. When a pandemic hits, whether it's this virus or whatever the next one is, because there will be another one, mm-hmm. that's the one thing we know, people who are less healthy will get hit harder. And that's just the way health goes. Kind of going back to how different places handled things differently, I'm interested in your thoughts on what happens next time. Let's say virus X hits us next January, and it just hit the global airwaves, and it's making its way around the globe. Do you think we are going to go back to exactly sort of the same plan that we had in 2020? Do you think it will be different? Do you think people will react the same way? Has that state of mind or personality changed because of the last lockdown so they won't do certain things? Or maybe some people will instantly kind of go back into that 2020 mode? I'm curious where you see this going the next time something like this happens.
That's a great question, Jack. There are people who are already pretty hard-baked about mm-hmm. their habits and what they'll do and what they won't do. Some people will barely go into a grocery store.
Yeah.
And if there's another pandemic, they will be pretty guarded about that. For the rest, it's really hard to say. If your child is 6 months and older, get them vaccinated. Not every parent is really excited to get a small child vaccinated because they're not sure how that vaccination will interact with whatever else their child is doing. And these are not anti-vax people at all.
Right.
They're totally right. vaccinated people. So I really don't know what to say about that. I do believe that there's always 30% of the population who are going to protest against whatever that thing is, whether it's getting a vaccination. Back when the polio vaccine came out, 30% of people said, my child is not going to get vaccinated. And that's just the way it is. In populations where there are political rifts, 30% of people are always going to behave a certain way. In which way, I'm not sure, but I feel like that one third is a really magic number in terms of how people behave against the system. Conventional wisdom.
I think there will be some more caution from more people who will be less likely to believe the quote unquote experts. And by experts, I include cable news hosts, because that's who most people consider experts. We have a real problem with credentials now, because we've had doctors say things that turned out to be a complete lie. And we've had politicians who we voted for who led us astray for one reason or another. I think there's a lot of agencies with a small a, lots of institutions in this country that people just don't believe in anymore. 50 years ago, if someone from a government agency came on television and or radio and said, this is happening, you would, your ears would perk up and you would say, oh boy, we better get in line. Let's go. I don't see that happening now. People will be more likely to disbelieve the government than believe them, with at least half of the population, if not more.
Well, what you've mentioned is a complete, I guess, distrust of any type of institution, not just the government, not just the CDC, every single organization, every single foundation, every single media outlet. You know, you brought up Tony Fauci, but he is the most trusted person in the United States.
People, by half the population, yeah.
But that's better than a third, which is where most politicians and media people are. So he does have a lot of people who believe in his competence. And I personally believe in his competence. Has he been perfect? Has he made mistakes? Has he perhaps, you know, made mistakes that he's not cop to? Probably. Mm-hmm. But he's done more help than harm. I think that a lot of experts were hamstrung by the previous administration. And that is not blaming a bunch of politicians. That's blaming one person. That person had a lot of sway with many other people who could have been modeling different behavior.
Fauci and so many experts, though, became politicians. Fauci lost me early in the pandemic when he said it was very important that we didn't go to churches and restaurants and businesses and everyone must stay home. And he was asked specifically about political protests. And he said, oh, well, I'm not going to tell anybody not to protest, not to go to, you know, like, okay, you're out. Well, you are now a politician. You are not a scientist.
I'm going to be a little bit of a politician here, because the way you reacted to the pandemic also had to do with climate. Both of us live in
political climate, or
no,
you mean actually, like weather
climate? Weather climate. Okay. Because if you live in a place where it's freezing 3 or 4 months of the year and otherwise not great weather, people tend to be insiders.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that was the real fear, was that masses of people in an enclosed place was a recipe for a lot of infection. So I think that's right. I think if you go into, you know, having a small child at one point, send them to nursery school and then send them back home and see what type of
right. We'll all get sick.
Type of thing.
Can't wait.
They bring home.
Bring home the Petri dish with you.
Exactly. So some of it has to do with, if you are not able to be outside, which is where most protests happen. I'm not defending any particular protest or protests in general. I think people can go out and show their displeasure with something. If it's a civil disobedience, all for it. So I think the outside, as opposed to being in a really crowded church, and I haven't been in one for a long time for fear that the roof will cave in over me.
But he also included sporting events. So you couldn't go to a NASCAR stadium, which last time I checked, I haven't been to one. But I think they're outside.
Are they open air? No, I guess they would be, right?
But I again, it had nothing to do with anything except playing to the politics of one side. And that's where he became a politician and not a scientist. And I don't know that there are any scientists that we see on television, right? They're all politicians. You know, they're all working for one side or the other, including at some point they're all working for a pharmaceutical company because that's who's sponsoring all of the news programs, right? Whether you're watching CBS or Fox, at some point there's an ad for Pfizer.
That's the individual media outlets saying, you know, who's going to pay X amount for this ad? And pharmaceutical companies are like, we have a few bucks.
Yeah, we have the money.
We'll pay for them.
I wonder why they have so much money.
I mean, I'm not sure that that is what is motivating scientists. Having said that, we all like to eat. So I can't go to Fauci's character. I happen to think that he did a pretty decent job given the situation that he had. Going forward, and this is another piece of the long term, there are several young people that I know who had pre-existing conditions, problems with their immune systems, and they do have long-term COVID symptoms where they have been hit neurologically. And that's one of the biggest problems that I think we're going to have going forward, because whether you have a mild to moderate mental illness because you've been enclosed, or whether you have some kind of hangover from the actual infection, there are going to be long-term neurological problems. And one neuroscientist had told me that he foresaw a lot of early onset dementia, Alzheimer's, and so much depression, particularly in middle-aged to older people. So it's probably hitting the kids with a lot more of anxiety and hitting the older people with a lot more depression, which is not great news for anybody. So this is what we have right now in front of us. Where do we go from here? How do we counsel people to find a better way when some people feel so low? Some people feel really hopeless about this, and I'm not one of them. Thank goodness. I feel fortunate in that way.
I'm glad you're not. I think anyone who's putting their trust and faith in television news or print media or the government, I feel sorry for those folks. You got to make your own decisions, do your own research, and choose what's best for your own personal health. And again, I'm kind of back to the don't listen to the people who are supposedly experts just because they're on television now. I would like to see this. Maybe this is something where we can agree. A great presidential matchup 2 years from now would not be the one that we think we're going to get. I don't know that anybody really wants to see Biden versus Trump again, right? Ugh. Like, really? Let's have a couple of octogenarians go at it and let's rehash the last two elections and let's talk about no policies. It's all personal. It's mean tweets versus incompetence. It's, you know, Trump is evil versus, you know, Biden is a crook, or, you know, it's all, you know, this one's family member did this.
That's so harsh. Oh, okay. Go ahead.
But no, I'm on both sides. These two gentlemen cannot have an election based on policies. It's all going to be on personality.
That might be foisted on them. I'm not so sure that Biden came in and it was a cult of personality. I think that he was somebody who people did not consider because of his personality. I think it's his appearance of normalcy that is not very exciting.
I don't see a normal person at that podium who's struggling to get through a sentence right now.
Well,
Biden of 20 years ago, I'll give that to you. But now, no way. It's going to be an argument of his incompetency versus Trump's horrible personality, right? I mean, that's what we're going to be voting on. And that's what the, not what we'll be voting on, but that's what the campaigns will be based on. This guy is terrible. Oh yeah, your guy is worse than our guy.
Joe Biden has done some very good things for the country.
Which country?
This one, the United States of America, the one in which we live. No, kind of not down with that at all. And I think the whole Hunter Biden thing, they have not really been able to find things in the forensics. I mean, number one, it's
his son. They will now that it will be investigated in the House of Representatives. I'm
not sure what they're going to cook up.
Even the New York Times is reporting on it. That's amazing.
Of course, because they report the news. So they're going to cover it.
Well, they didn't for the last 2 years. They squashed it for two years, and now it's out.
I find it's just not as important a story. I don't think that our national security is at risk because Hunter Biden had an opiate problem.
I don't think it was the drug problem. I think it was the problem he had with China and Russia and the Ukraine. I mean, that's where this story is going to go.
That's very general, but let's move on because that's a whole other discussion.
Actually, that kind of brings it back though. Are we going to have an election about the future? And I think that's where maybe we can find some common ground, that if we could get rid of both of these characters and move forward with new leadership in a couple of parties, let's find people who are going to lead us into the year 2028. I think that's where we as a country could make the right move in going forward. We're not fighting the 90s anymore. We need to think about the year 2020.
Well, because in the 90s, some guy named Clinton was president and, Republican House went after him. And that was a very unpopular thing to do. And just to sort of close the loop on this, this sort of impeachment attempt on Joe Biden and trying to get to the bottom of whatever's going on with Hunter Biden, it is going to backfire on them. They need to walk away from that. That is going to be their kryptonite. If they care anything about their party, they need to step away from the Bidens and show that they actually do have a national policy that they can put up for 2024. And that is, I'm not rooting for the GOP to gain the presidency, but if someone really great comes by, whoever is going to further the interests of the American people and create a peaceable way for us to get along and to live, they have my vote. But until that time, I just look at them and say, you don't even have a party anymore. You've cannibalized yourselves from all of this vitriol. People aren't buying it anymore. It's the beginning of the end
half
or
the
middle of the end.
Though. Yeah.
Oh, half the people.
I disagree. I think when you have a president who's so underwater, the least popular president in my lifetime, and I was around for LBJ, I don't know that that's the case. I think the Hunter story, not so much drugs and women and, what a horrible human being he is with his family life. No one cares about that because the Trumps are the same way. Right. Let's face it. And the Bushes were worse. I'll put that out there as well.
It's more GOP whataboutism. It's like, yeah, you got Trump. Now we got to get you guys on something equally big. And it's a false equivalency, in my humble opinion. Again, agree to disagree.
Yeah.
What can I say?
I would love to see this matchup for the next presidential election. Like I keep trying to say, let's get rid of these losers and go with people who are actively leading this country. We have a governor in California. We have a governor in Florida. Two completely different directions in how they're managing their states.
Oh, yes.
And how they managed the pandemic and the lockdown. And it's like, what would the chances be that we could get those two people to be our candidates for the next election?
Well, I know I want one.
Yeah, I think we all do. I think we all want one of those two. But unfortunately, I think we're going to get stuck with Biden and Trump.
Well,
or somebody.
I think we need an extended time to just talk about this because, believe me, we will have, I mean, you predicted this. We're going to be talking about this a lot.
Yeah.
Over the next 2 years.
We've got a year and a half. Yeah,
yeah, more than either one of us can probably stomach it. So, all right. So maybe people's personalities change. Maybe they don't. Maybe there's some more mental illness. I always like to leave on a hopeful note. And you made one great suggestion that I think any shrink would probably be all behind. Hell yeah. Take a break from social media, cable news, turn it off. Go out, take a walk, find a friend, join a church group, join a book group, do some nonprofit work, you know, find a way to just be with people. If you haven't been with people, maybe the antidote is to be with people.
Yeah, totally agree. All right, let's go be with people.
Let's go be with people. I like being with you people.
I like you people as well.
Always a pleasure. And you know what? I even like those fights because it's so much fun to make up.
All right. We make up next time. Thank you.
If you like what you hear on Embark, share this episode with a friend. Tell a few people about it. Spread the word. And please subscribe. If you want to get in touch with your comments, questions, suggestions, liz@embarkthepodcast.com. There is so little time and so many ways to spend it with the have-tos and the want-tos. So thank you for the privilege of your time, spending it here on Embark. Have a great week and see you next time.